A real bodice ripper contains explicit,
salacious,
delicious,
not safe for work content.
Isn't that great?
But no, seriously, listener discretion is advised.
A real bodice ripper.
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 I can't tell you how many times I've read a book and they end up in a cabin, and that's where the deed occurs.
There's something really cozy about cabin sex, I guess. I don't know. I don't think I've had cabin sex. No.
Well, you haven't lived.
Clearly not.
In my memory, I don't think I've had cabin sex.
I've had hotel sex, but not cabin sex. It's kind of like going to a place that's different from home, you know, where you kind of
a cabin get cozy. And a hotel are not the same. Like a cabin is in the middle of the woods, and a hotel is like, that could be like a Best Western.
Yes. Well, yes. But I mean, they're both like vacation destinations.
Yes, perhaps. No, but I think in the books, the cabin represents like a getaway together from like the story, the chaos of the main story. And it's like, let's get away, baby, just you and I. And that's when we have A Court of Thorn and Roses.
Yeah. Our Haven, was it Haven?
Well, he lived in a cabin.
He lived in a cabin, but also.
Everyone has a cabin.
That's true.
And then we have A Deal with the Elf King. Mm-hmm. Countless others.
Many. Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods, even though they have sex outside of the cabin and then are immediately ripped to shreds.
Fun.
Yeah, what a great romance.
Yes, yes. Two very different tropes. Mm. Romance is Cabin in the Woods versus horror movie Cabin in the Woods.
I think he has a husband bulge. Remember, that's my favorite line.
Yeah.
Can we introduce ourselves and start the episode?
We should get going. Hello, I am Rachel.
I'm Jessie.
And welcome to A Real Bodice Ripper.
Sorry, Alex was looking at me. I'm sorry.
How rude.
Please continue.
It's a podcast that explores the delicious, guilty, and sometimes problematic pleasure that is found in romance novels.
Yes, but today is all pleasure.
Oh, so much pleasure. I feel like any problematicness is like really nitpicking, but
a stretch to be sure.
Yes. And we are bringing to you, readers, our very first Hades and Persephone story. It's Neon Gods by Katie Robert.
Yes. And this is a title that you and I kind of we found Katie Robert's Neon Gods. You stumbled upon it because it was like a free audiobook or something.
Yeah. On Spotify.
I've always been into Greek mythology. I was like, you and I were deeply into Lore Olympus. It was the middle of the pandemic. It's dark time. And we needed the juice. And this was
not the juice.
This is not from Concentrate. This is amazing. So we were like, you have to read this, Neon Gods. So I started listening to it. Then I just got the book and started reading it. And we were like, why haven't we covered this book yet? We have to cover Neon Gods. It's great.
So it is good to know, listeners, that you are able to listen to this for free on Spotify. It is there as an audiobook. But I do want to give a couple of what to expect. It's not going to be your typical audiobook experience if that's how you usually listen to books, because Spotify isn't really made for that. And I think this was them kind of like feeling it out, seeing if this is something they could get into. And instead of listing it similar to the way that they do a podcast, where you can do things like change the speed, they kind of listed it like an album, but then the chapters were too long to fit on one track. So it is divided into like 200 little sections of chapter. And what was really frustrating to me is like with a podcast where I can kind of track what I have listened to it and like pick up where I left off. With this one, anytime any music played on Spotify or anything in between, I would then go back to listen to this book and have no idea where I had left off, and it didn't correspond to the chapters. So it was really hard to find where I had left off. But I believe it's probably the same recording that you would get if you had the audiobook on Audible. It's a great quality performance. And if you're curious, check it out. I also have the book as well as listened to it on Spotify. So just so you know, that's there.
Nice. Thank you for that promotional.
You're welcome. Spotify. Spotify, I want to throw a little love our way. We can for my lukewarm Spotify audiobook review.
Like, it wasn't that great.
The book was great. The experience needs to be worked on, for sure. So, tell us about it.
Okay, I'm going to read the book description for Neon Gods. It's part of the Dark Olympus book series by Katie Robert. Is it Katie Robert or Katie Roberts?
It is Robert singular.
Okay. Sorry, Katie. Okay, here's the book description for Neon Gods. He was supposed to be a myth, but from the moment I crossed the River Styx and fell under his dark spell, he was, quite simply, mine. A scorchingly hot modern retelling of Hades and Persephone that's as sinful as it is sweet. So this book's summary reads like a trailer.
It does. You have the voice dropping in to be like, she never expected to see this. She never expected.
Society darling, Persephone Demetrio? Plans to flee the ultra-modern city of Olympus and start over far from the backstabbing politics of the 13 houses. But all that's ripped away from her when her mother ambushes her with an engagement to Zeus, the dangerous power behind their glittering city's dark facade. With no options left, Persephone flees to the forbidden undercity and makes a devil's bargain with a man she once believed a myth, a man who awakens her to a world she never knew existed. Hades has spent his life in the shadows, and he has no intention of stepping into the light. But when he finds that Persephone can offer a little slice of the revenge he spent years craving, it's all the excuse he needs to help her, for a price. Yet every breathless night spent tangled together has given Hades a taste for Persephone, and he'll go to war with Olympus to keep her close.
Exciting times ahead.
Yeah, I don't know how you wouldn't want to read this book.
Yes, like already 10 out of 10.
It's Rachel's favorite.
Yes. So let me tell you a little bit about the author. Katie Robert is a New York Times and USA Today bestselling author who learned to tell her stories at her grandpa's knee. Her 2015 title, The Marriage Contract, was a Rita finalist, and RT Book Reviews named it a compulsively readable book with just the right amount of suspense and tension. Entertainment Weekly calls her writing unspeakably hot. Her books have sold over 1 million copies. She lives in the Pacific Northwest with her husband, children, a cat who thinks he's a dog, and two great Danes who think they're lap dogs. When not writing sexy, contemporary, and romantic suspense, she spends her time playing imaginary games with her children, driving her husband batty with what-if questions, and planning for the inevitable zombie apocalypse.
This is very millennial.
Yes.
Like, if the only thing that would make this more millennial, Katie, is if you added your Hogwarts house.
Inquiring minds need to know these important details.
Yeah.
You can find her online at katieroberts.com, on Facebook at author Katie Robert. You can follow her on Instagram and Twitter at Katie_Robert. She has a YouTube and a TikTok. And lastly, she has a Patreon where you can get brand new short stories featuring favorite characters, early access to indie releases, not safe for work art featuring favorite characters, signed books, audiobooks, and a lot more.
Nice. That's yes. Cool. I love it. I love it when like authors continue the world building through some of this media, like, you know, like creating playlists for the book or, yeah, like having a Patreon and doing fan art. A lot of Webtoon authors do that. And I just think it's really cool. It kind of like keeps the thrill of the story alive. And these are worlds that sometimes we don't want to leave. We want to kind of stay within them and continue the fun.
Especially, yes. And I think what's really neat, especially with something like this, where she has her different books, she has her Disney villain kind of book romances, she has a couple of these gods-based romances. I love that they're not sequential series, so you can just kind of pop in and enjoy the world, or she has that great world building that's happening overall that can be reused in other ways, in things like the art and things like these other books, but you don't need to necessarily read them in order. So I do love that. I love getting away from series books just because I want to have a conclusion to my story. There's a handful of books right now that I'm waiting on conclusions to, and I'm like, ah!
Oh, no. I really have ever been in that situation. Every book that we've read on here, even if we devoured the rest of the series, was out. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just listened to the series. The first one is called Guild, and it's like it's King Midas-y and very high fantasy, but also sexy sex. And so I've listened to the first two of them, to like Guild and not Glow. They're all like Guild, Glow, Glint, all like this.
But did you say Glint?
Glint with a G.
Oh, I thought you said Glint.
All sparkly G words. And so I listened to the first two on audiobook, and then the third one's out. The fourth one is just about to be released, but the third one isn't out on audiobook yet. And I'm like, but I'm driving long distances. I need books to play at my ears.
Dear beloved author, I know you have a life.
But I would really like
the fuck on it. Because I have a drive coming up. Just kidding.
And I need to listen to this.
Just call me at this number. And just dictate to me your manuscript.
Read me aloud, please. Thank you.
Wisdom.
Yeah.
Should we do our ratings?
Yes, we have ratings. We love judging things, dear readers, and hopefully you enjoy our judging of things and can take it as a guidance of like how to approach these books if they're new to you, and maybe it will excite you about them, or maybe it'll say, hey, maybe that one won't be my favorite. Starting with our spice rating, these are all out of 5, spice being the tension and the sexy times and the chemistry, all of that.
The buildup, yeah, chemistry. I out of 5, I gave it a 5. Neon Gods is a 5 out of 5 in terms of spice for me.
Me too. 5 out of 5. 100.
It's got a great amount of flirting. The chemistry is believable. It's both realistic and over the top, which is amazing. You know, the je ne sais quoi. I don't know what it is. Like, they've got it. Like, they're just, you know, Hades is
paced really well. Like, you're not waiting 78% of the book to get any
amount of sex, but it doesn't detract from the story. It's a very well-balanced meal.
Mm-hmm. And we just ate it up.
I came back for seconds.
Yes, we both did. Next is our trope rating. And a trope is a literary device that can be used to further the plot. They tend to be the things that you see happening over and over again.
It could be technically a stereotype, like
yes.
Enemies to lovers or something.
Yes. And so we had some handful of tropes. We had forced proximity. We have he's mean to everyone but me. A fake marriage. Being held hostage and it's actually awesome. Sunshine and Storm Cloud being our two protagonists. Soft mafia vibes to it. Mm-hmm. Greek mythology retelling. Good girl is kind of a bad girl, and bad guy is a cinnamon roll. And, and what's this last one, Jesse?
Respectfully, Katie Roberts, I put beards with a frowny face.
It's not just like a normal frowny face, it's the one with the like, the very angle, like, very like.
Angled frown. I was like, me. I don't know why, but like, okay, bearded men aren't like a turnoff for me. It's not that. I think they're very handsome and, you know, beards can be very sexy. I just don't know if I prefer them in my romance books. However, happy for the representation of beards. I do think that, you know, men have beards. And you know what? Actually, not just men have beards. I'm not even going to have a beard. But the point is that, like, happy for it. But I was just like, oh, I don't know. Like, and you know what it is? I have a very specific image of Hades in my mind. Yes.
Yeah.
It may or may not be like a dark-haired Tom Holland or
Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just can't put a beard on that man. So that was me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think what I had said is, even though I know it said he had a beard, there's never a point in my mind where I was picturing him with one as I read through this. To me, it was like, Hades does not have a beard.
We're being petty. I don't know.
But being weird.
It did not detract at all from his hotness.
No.
So deliciously written, Katie.
Yes.
Kudos to you. Anyway, I really loved it. So yeah, those are our tropes.
So what did you rate it?
With that many tropes, I gave it a 4 out of 5. Now, again, tropes aren't always a bad thing. Like in Romancelandia, we love our tropes. So I didn't dislike the number of tropes. I think when they're done well, it can be really fun and juicy. And that's kind of what came through for me here.
Yes. And I gave it a 3.5. And that is because it was very tropey. But I think I rate it higher in the trope rating when they're not done well, when there's a lot, but they're also not done well. But because there was a lot, but it still came together in a great story, I gave it a 3.5.
Okay. And then the last rating we do is an overall rating. Again, this is out of 5, and this is just our overall opinion of the book.
Yes.
Numerically. I gave it a 5 out of 5. Rachel?
I gave it an 11. It goes to 11. I really love it. I love it so much.
Are you sure?
I love it so much. It goes to 11. We shouldn't just make 5 more. It goes all the way to 11. Yeah, it's such a good book. It makes me really happy. The sexy times are just the kind of sexy times I like. The story is great. I love myself some Greek mythology. And dear readers, on Goodreads, it only has a 3.75 out of 5. And I'm a little confused because I've seen a lot less good books rated much higher on Goodreads. So I feel like if you love this book, we need to get onto Goodreads and really let everyone know how amazing it is.
Go with some love. And for everyone else, you know, you are entitled to your wrong opinion.
Yeah. It's okay if you're wrong.
You know, that's a part of life. So where do we start off with this book? Like, where do we, I'm kind of like, dang, like, where do we even start? Because there's a lot to dive into. There's so many fun parts.
There is. And like, even though I just reread it, I still feel like because I reread it a second time, it's just like, I have a broad view of it in my mind right now. So I think one place we can start is the upper city and yes. the way that we really see this world that Katie has created around Greek mythology and the difference that is there in our upper city versus our lower city, because it all starts with our dearest, lovely sunshine, Persephone, at a fancy party, being just taken off guard by an announcement that she is to be married to Zeus.
Boo!
Boo. I mean,
this story, at least. I wasn't surprised, but I was disappointed. There's many retellings of Hades and Persephone, and they do it a lot of different ways. You know, you've got Lore Olympus, you've got Receiver of Many, you've got Deal with the Elf King, you've got Touch of Darkness, more on that later. And they all deal with like the essential nuts and bolts of the story differently of how Persephone gets to the underworld. Mm-hmm. And in this one, it's Demeter selling her out. Demeter's kind of an opportunist. Yes. And wants her daughter to be well off and whatnot. And they're socialites, so she's going to, like, stick her with Zeus. Zeus is – one thing to know about this as well, which I still am trying to wrap my head around, is that, like, Zeus and Hades and these, like, Greek god titles are just that. They're titles. Like, there could be multiple yes. of them in succession. So, like, for example, right now Zeus is the current Zeus, but then when he dies – the next Zeus will come about, and that's like maybe his sons, you yes. know, and they'll be the next Zeus. So Perseus is the next Zeus, and Hades yes. before he was Hades was the son of the previous Hades. It's not like mm-hmm. it's not like Greek gods where they're immortal. I think they're mortal yes. in this story.
Yeah, so everyone is normal, human, and immortal. So we're thinking about the structure of the godhood as being the ruling structure mm-hmm. of this city. So instead of being immortal beings that are always there, there are these powerful houses. They call them the 13 houses, and they are aligned with the names of all the gods. But I believe that Zeus and Hades are the only houses that are handed down through family. So from father to son. And the other gods, instead of being handed down, they're actually appointed. So they are almost like government positions. And those government positions kind of see over similar to things to what these gods were known for in our Greek history. So Demeter is kind of the person that's in charge of all the farms and produce and bringing in the food to the city. And she actually kind of started as a farmer and now is Demeter, the leader of this for the city of the Olympus. City,
right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Olympus, right? It's the upper city.
Yes.
And that being said, so there's kind of at this point been, you know, we know in classic mythology, classic lore, Zeus and Hera, there's been multiple Heras.
Yes, and not even multiple Heras overall, multiple Heras that have been with this Zeus. There have been one Zeus, and he has been with three different Heras, and they didn't just get divorced. No, these Heras died.
But Rachel, that sounds so suspicious. How did they die?
Mysterious circumstances, and no one can stand up against Zeus, obviously, because he's the most powerful. So although everyone knows this guy is a murderer, they just let it be. It's almost like when everyone knows that someone has committed many crimes and yet somehow nothing has been done to stop
them. Oh my gosh, what are you talking about?
I don't know.
I'm clutching my pearls right now. Anyway, so Yeah, it's uncanny. How could a sexual predator hold office?
It's crazy.
Zeus is a murderer. Mm-hmm. Demeter's like, a fine choice of husband for my precious daughter. Again, yes. This is one of those like Hades and Persephone retellings where Demeter's kind of cast in like a kind of a crass light, you know, like she's an opportunist.
Very controlling opportunist. I think like in the more kind of historical type versions, she's actually way more protective of Persephone.
Exactly. But there are some retellings where she's written as kind of more almost like too protective. And then it like it borderlines on manipulative. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we see that in Touch of Darkness a little bit too. I don't know. I might be getting all these mixed up because I have.
Amir Olympus, she's super, super protective, but also very manipulative in the process of protecting her.
We can be, yes, but there are many schools of theory on that, and you do not want to get attacked because the Lore Olympus fandom comes strong. That's not to say there are many schools. Some people love Demeter, and then other people in the Lore Olympus fandom, and then some people are like, can't believe that Demeter. at least that's my overall opinion. I will withdraw.
I've not delved into the forums, so.
I'm just saying that like Demeter is cast in many lights throughout these retellings, but in this one she's definitely cast, and like in Neon Gods she's definitely cast as more like an opportunistic, very crass, not very loving, mm-hmm. like it
not very motherly.
Not very motherly, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so the upper city itself is really seen as a very manipulative kind of place where everyone is just trying to be in power. There's also this weird sheen of purity culture where it's all about appearances. It's all about the fact that they are the good ones and it's very light. Whereas they kind of look at the lower city as very dark and base instinct and people down on their luck go there. So there's an interesting kind of dichotomy because it isn't, in this story, it isn't about you're living up here and in Hades' realm, you're dead. In this one, it's just two parts of a city where everyone is living.
Right. And Hades is seen as a monster, like a boogeyman in the upper city. He's definitely like quote unquote a part of the 13, but he's a silent member. He's basically an outcast and has no contact with the rest of the 13. And he's, you know, in like kind of typical lore, he's kind of seen as like a scary figure no one really wants to interact with.
He is. So and while the 13 knows he's alive, the rest of the people do not. Like, apparently your average person on the street believes that the Hades family tree actually died off and there's no longer anyone in control of that. And so Zeus is actually the one in charge of the lower city, although he doesn't really pay much attention to it. That's kind of the perception. So Persephone always thought that Hades was at one point, but no longer exists. She kind of had a little fascination with him.
She stared at his statue in the tower. She's like,
yeah. I do love a good Hades Persephone telling where she's very intrigued by this god of the underworld.
She's like, the telling where she's not outright kidnapped is good.
Yeah, you know, she might want to actually be there. It's nice.
Yeah. But so she's at this party. She does get hoisted into this like, what? I'm engaged to Zeus. And she's terrified of Zeus, rightfully so. And she's curious about Hades. But that's like before. Like she's like before she gets hoisted up on stage or whatever, she just has this moment where she's looking at Hades' statue. And so what does she do after she finds out that she's, I guess, apparently engaged to a murderer?
Goes outside. Kind of starts wandering, realizes she's being followed.
She has like a moment with her sister too, oh, yeah. where she kind of her sister, I don't know, they're trying to like talk it out, and like Persephone's like, I'm gonna go for a walk. And I think kind of subconsciously is like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
She had already been planning a way to get out of Olympus. Persephone's big goal was, I hate this gilded city and I don't want to be part of it. I'm getting out as soon as I'm old enough to get my trust fund, and I'm getting out into the real world away from these fakers and these manipulators. And so this, she's 6 months away from, or maybe even 3 months away.
Her birthday?
Yeah, right there, so close to having her inheritance and getting out, and this happens, and she realizes, I have to get out now, because once he has me, I'm not going to be able to make this big escape. And she doesn't really have a plan, but she is pursued by thugs through the streets and finds herself running in heels down to the river. And makes her way across this bridge, which as she's passing across this bridge, there's this pressure on her. Her feet are bloodied and gashed up. And there's this man on the other side who she sees, and she calls to him for help. And he's like, you have to come to me. You have to come to me. And so she does finally make it to him, and he sweeps her up, tells the thugs, fuck you, this girl is mine. And this is how they meet.
This is Persephone and Hades meet cute.
Yeah, bloody on a bridge. Yeah.
Yeah, they meet on a bridge because she runs to the Undercity. I don't think she's actually trying to, but she's kind of like, fuck it. Like, she's like, I don't want to be controlled. I can't be tamed. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And he sweeps her up and takes her into his underground tunnels and back to his estate. You
she
know,
bleeds like, on his floor. He gets a little bit perturbed. Yeah, because
she's trying to run in heels and it's like icy and her feet are just fucked up. There's like broken glass at some point. I think she.
Yeah, I feel eventually the heels come off and there's glass in the feet. So it's not looking too nice, but she is saved. And she learns that this is Hades, that Hades is real and he exists. And, oh, he is fun.
He's fucking hot. Oh, shit. He's like, he hardly looks like a boogeyman. He's like, no. Honestly, kind of like an incubus or something. Like, he's like dark hair and like lithe and just, I mean, I was like.
Like
turn the page. Yes.
A suit cut for the gods. Yes. Well-groomed.
Long hair.
See, that part also doesn't register in my brain.
What do you mean?
I don't like long hair on guys.
What? What's wrong?
I don't like it. Wait. I'm supposed to have the long hair. I don't know.
I thought, okay, Tom Hiddleston has long hair, though. You're a big Tom. Wait,
okay. When he has Loki, it's not my favorite hair. I like when his hair is shorter, when he has it cut shorter and his, like, dark waves.
No. Mm.
Yeah, okay. I don't like it as much as long. I still love him no matter what because
listeners,
I love that man.
We need your input. Do you like long, luscious, wavy hair on a male protagonist, or do you like short hair?
Okay, it can still be luscious and wavy and still fall above his shoulders.
No.
It's still really grabbable.
Braid that shit.
No, I love mussy, wavy, like not super short, but not long. And I will fingers in that, yes.
But he has long hair. Anyway, it's so attractive and she's But you're doing it. She's her whole life has been told this is like a bad man. So she's rightfully very mistrusting. And he's already very like barky and kind of like, give me your feet. I'm going to fix your feet.
Do what I say.
Like, he's like, sit. You know, his social skills are not refined. He's like, sit.
Yeah.
Stay.
Yeah. He's never has good social skills.
That is one thing across the spectrum you can always count on is like cute, but. I don't know.
I think it's something about living.
No, more Olympus Hades is perfect social skills. He's a gentleman. So.
Well, he's a gentleman, but he's also super awkward in that, too. Like, sweet, but awkward.
I suppose, right?
And more than this, it makes extra sense because he's just like, he'd been raised most of his life in the land of the dead because he's actually living with the dead there.
That's true.
Yes.
But yeah, so he fixes her feet. She's untrusting of him. And they're basically go to bed. There's a soft interlude here with like Hermes and Dionysius. And apparently like they, Hermes in this book is a girl.
Because it's not set in stone. This is an appointment. And really the big skill that you have to have as Hermes is that you have to be able to like get anywhere that you need to go.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to deliver messages from other gods. And in this case, it's basically like she opens up her mouth and that other person's voice pours out.
Yes. And they're tricksters, her and Dionysius. They're always breaking into her
I always say Dionysus.
Well, who knows what the correct pronunciation is. They're always breaking into Hades' house. And I remember at one point Hades is like, "Do you have a home?" And then she's like, "Home is such a fluid concept."
Yeah. I think he finds out that they have a room that they sleep in there. And he's just like, "What? What?"
He's like, "You live here sometimes?" Yeah. It's people problems.
In my compound, you live? Okay.
And I think Persephone is really shocked to find out, because she's like familiar with Hermes and Dionysius. Like she's kind of a part of the 13 through her mom. And when she finds out that Hermes and Dionysius are there, she's like, "Oh, you've known the whole time there's a real Hades?" And those two are like, "Yeah, of course, like we're always here." Like they're kind of like chaotic neutrals. Like they don't really have a side, but they do work for Zeus. So it's like, I don't know.
Yes. Yeah, there's a very interesting dynamic with the gods where it's basically all of them on the one side and Hades on the other side, but then you have people like Hades and Dionysus that are having to kind of also come over into his realm and deal with him, and because of that there's also an uneasy friendship. It's very, Hades makes it very clear that he does not think of these people as friends, but part of the journey is that they become his friends throughout this.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And also there's a reason why Hades does not like Zeus. Do you want to tell us why?
Is it because his family was murdered to death
by Zeus?
A very small child by Zeus?
Yes.
So Hades is the youngest reigning Hades to date. Mm-hmm. Like he ended up, was he 4 years old or something when he took over the role?
I mean, it was, I thought it was like 17. I don't think it was like four, was, I don't know. I could be wrong. It's been a while since
he was really young, like, because he didn't even take over the role right away. Andres,
who is
a person that he now views as a father, was kind of the regent for the underworld or lower city. And he kind of held everything in place while he also taught Hades about being a leader and got him ready. And I think 17 is when he handed over the rule of the lower city to Hades.
Okay, actually, that tracks.
Yes. And so they definitely were murdered. They were definitely murdered by Zeus. And it was actually intended that this Hades would also die. He was caught in a horrendous fire. He is covered in scars all over his body. He has a lot of insecurities around it because he was with a rude-ass lover, which I was really like, it was exciting that this, his first lover was a man. That was kind of fun and unexpected. I was like, awesome. But then this lover definitely shamed him about his scars and made him feel ugly and unlovable. And so Persephone has some work to do to let him know that he is lovable.
Fuck that guy.
I love myself some bisexual Hades, but what?
I love bisexual Persephone, by the way, too. She's also bisexual. Her previous partner was also a woman named Maria.
It's true.
Love it.
Ready to spice things up in the bedroom? Treat yourself to a pair of exceptional leather restraints and collars from Leather Etc. Whether you've been getting kinky for years or just looking for something fun to bring into your relationship, Leather Etc. has what you're looking for.
Don't let low-quality gear ruin the mood. Chafing, sharp edges, and broken hardware are distractions that you don't want in the bedroom.
Nope.
A high-quality set of gear lets you get lost in the moment. You can struggle all you want in their restraints. They use high-quality hardware that's virtually unbreakable.
When you bring something into the bedroom, it can be heartbreaking when it breaks.
It really can.
You want something that can become a part of your intimacy for years to come. When properly cared for, Leather Etc.'s gear will last you a lifetime.
Much of their gear features no metal on the wearer's skin, and this means it won't cause discomfort and is better for subs with nickel allergies.
Like you.
Like me.
95% of restraints and collars made by Leather Etc. are handmade in San Francisco by a staff with over 200 years.
That's a lot of years.
Combined experience.
They're like fairies.
I know. They've been doing this a long time.
Yep.
They start with the highest quality leather hide and stitch it together by hand using techniques learned from over 35 years of being in the business. That's why their gear is the highest quality you'll find anywhere.
Yes. So what are you waiting for? Visit leatheretc.com today and grab a pair of handcuffs or maybe a collar from Leather Etc. and see the difference quality gear can make. I already grabbed a sweet day collar that I absolutely adore, and they also have a great selection of sensory toys that I started to explore, so.
Awesome.
Go check it out.
And don't forget to use our code BODDISRIPPER at checkout for 10% off, on top of free shipping on orders over $50. That's code BODICERIPPER. Did I spell that right?
Yeah.
For 10% off, as well as free shipping for orders over $50, okay?
Leather Etc. Made with love, for love, since 1985.
Just like you.
I'm a year older.
Oops, I'm sorry. I know how old you are.
I'm just close, very close.
Sorry for dating you. Go buy some toys.
Go buy them now.
So the point is, there's bad blood here between Hades and Zeus. And who should run into his arms in the middle of a freezing cold night with bloody feet? And he finds this out from Hermes and Dionysius. He's like, wow, so you just kidnapped the fiance of Zeus? And Hades is like, oh, that's too good. That's too good. But I could never use her because he's truly a good person on the inside.
Yes.
And so they're kind of at a standstill. And it's Persephone who comes to him the next day and is kind of
and
like,
has a plan.
She has a plan. And this is truly, I have to say, because, you know, we called one of the tropes out, I'm being held hostage and it's actually awesome, is the trope. Mm-hmm. This, like, kind of fake marriage, held hostage, not against the will, it can get kind of creepy, but because she's the one who proposes it and he's kind of like, she's at one point, what does she say? She's basically like, hey, we should do this and like, let them know that you own me. And he's like,
yes.
No, I won't. Yes. Because he thinks she's kidding and she just wants it to be all a ruse. But she says, Zeus is notorious for not wanting what he considers tarnished goods. So tarnish me.
Yes. 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 What a wonderful suggestion, Miss Persephone.
It's only logical.
It's the best logic.
Hades is like, oh, what? You know, you can't be serious. And she's like, I'm dead serious, baby. And she kind of comes, and he's like, I am shocked. He's like, look at this, like, you know, this little siren. He calls her little siren. He calls her like, yeah, like Persephone.
Yeah, and he really recognizes, like, he recognizes the way that she has a mask that she's had to put together to survive in the upper city, and the way that that mask starts coming down with him. And it doesn't happen right away, but he can see the glimpses of the real Persephone at times in the beginning here. He's really also pushing to kind of know when she's being real or when she's just putting up a front. And I think that's one reason why we see Hades be so insistent upon consent throughout this, because he doesn't want her doing it just because she needs to do this to get through. He wants her to be enthusiastically there and consenting for the right reasons.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, my king. Yes.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. It's almost like it's incredibly sexy when men are like, I want you to be enthusiastically consenting. It's like, hell yeah, of course. Let me show you that. And he is. He's like, he's taking her very seriously. He's like, you don't have to do this. You know, like, yeah, do I want Zeus to be like dead? Unalived? Yes, but like, you don't have to do this. And she's like, I want to do this. Like, you and I both have a part to play here. And she's like, so let's do it for real. And he's like, if you do this, you're mine for three months. Cause like, that's the plan, right? Because she's like, hey, in 3 months, I get my trust fund. I'm outie. And until then, you just like fucking, you lay the thing down, sir. Yeah, own me. Lay it down good. Let's have some fun. And then I'm out and you can, you know, whatever, get one up on Zeus and get some revenge. Maybe get a couple knocks in. And he's like, you know what? What else have I got to do? You're hot. And you're
what else do I have to do but you? Let's have some fun.
He tells her at one point that, you know, oh, you're wasted on them, because she's brilliant and he sees it. He's like, oh, they have no idea who you are, do they?
Mm-hmm.
So he, how are they going to show the upper city that Persephone is now in the clutches of Dark Hades?
Well, I'm pretty sure the only way that one could really let everyone know that this is the case is to go to a sex club where they sit on a throne that isn't the main attraction. There is a dais. But the throne is kind of off to the side, but still elevated, still visible, but a little bit in the shadows. And you know what? Maybe they just need to fuck a little bit in front of everyone on top of this throne.
Yeah. Dear listener, dear reader.
I hope you like cake.
Hades has... If you know, what do we call this? A sex dungeon. And he is known for basically hosting these like sex parties, these orgies. And what's fucking hilarious is all of these little upper city motherfuckers come down to the lower city and they get their rocks off or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back up and don't talk about it.
Yes.
And she even says that to him. Like,
they're such hypocrites.
Yeah, she basically calls them hypocrites, but basically it's after they boink in the sex party and Eros comes up to them and is like, you better be careful. You're playing with fire. Like, you know, you just like rode Hades in front of everybody. And she does. She has sex with them. And and she's like, I can't believe all these people come down here and basically like, if their sins happen in the dark, did it even happen? She's like, I guess it didn't happen. Cause then they go up there and they talk shit about you, when in reality, you're the one who hosts the den of iniquity.
Yeah.
And so, it's funny. So, I will say, sorry, one more thing and then I'll be quiet. Cause I'm like ranting, but there is the scene where he brings her before the party down to the dungeon to like introduce her to it. And he like ends up diddling her a little bit.
Yeah.
Just giving a little not even 50 Shades of Grey feel to it, because he's like, once you go through this door. Well, and I don't know what it is like, but that was like, okay, this is a very Christian Grey moment. He's like, you cannot. You're mine once you go through this door. Yeah. And she, like, as if like once she sees it, she can't say no or something. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And because like at the same time, he's so focused on consent that of course the minute she has hesitations, he is right there. He is responding. He is caring. But he does make it sound very scary at first, where like, there is no turning back from this moment.
He's like, in this room, I am sir, you know, you call me sir, like I'll do whatever I want to you. And she's like, yeah, I'd like that. And he's like, are you sure? And she's like, yes, I am. And he's like, because there is no turning back. And she's like, good.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I just want to make sure you're sure. And she's like, fuck
totally
me
sure.
already.
And was this when we got our safe word?
Yes, we did. He was insistent on a safe word. We do love a safe word. And he had her pick one. I don't think she ever uses it in the book.
Well, she doesn't have to. Does she choose it or did he give it to her?
She chooses pomegranate, yes.
Okay, but I just love that it's pomegranate.
Katie does a great job of weaving in the traditional lore, you know, parts of it. Like later on in the book, they get puppies, three of them.
Yes. And one of them is named Cerberus. Yes.
Which means spot.
That's what Cerberus means?
Yeah. I don't know. I can't break this down, but like if you break it down, I've seen like things about this on the internet and the internet never lies to me.
Never.
It translates to spot.
That's very basic.
Cute basic. Is what it is.
It's sweet cute. And cute. I mean, I was expecting it to translate to guardian of the underworld, guardian of dead souls.
So cute. She's consenting like more than enough. She's like not only consenting, she's almost practically begging. And he's like, no, which is sexy because it's like, it's kind of fun. He gets to play with depravity.
Yes. I do love, there was a quote that I really loved when she was first pitching this to him and talking about how Zeus was all about not wanting things that are tarnished. I loved how she was a little bit surprised by Hades' reaction. And she says to him, "Silly me for thinking that you're among the percentage of the human population that doesn't worship at the altar of the Hymen."
Yes, I know, because he says, "Are you a virgin?" And she's like, she kind of plays it coy. And then he's like, yeah. Oh, and then when she says, "Don't worry about that," he changes his demeanor. And she's like, "Oh my God, you want me to be a virgin, don't you? Like every other fucking man." And
he's like, "Actually, no."
Yeah, I love that she's like, "I'm not a virgin." I love that she's not a virgin. I love that she kind of throws shade at the idea of the construct that is virginity and the hymen, which not every person has.
Yeah. We appreciate this.
Realism is amazing. It's not too in your face. It's just like very casually, like these characters kind of know what they're talking about and they're going to bring in some social issues and just kind of put it out there. And I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have the party, and it's sexy.
And it's very sexy, and we continue to see them come mm-hmm. together. He takes her out into the lower city. She gets to go to a dressmaker that makes her amazing dresses to wear, and the whole reason this dressmaker, Juliet, I believe, lives in the lower city is because of having to run away from Zeus and... Yeah. The politics and all that up there. And so she gets this beautiful wardrobe. She meets people of the city in a market, and she just sees this deep love and respect that everyone has for Hades, how it's so different from what she's used to seeing the leadership of Zeus receive, where it's almost like he rules through fear and Hades rules through love and respect, which just makes her like him even more.
He's falling for him hard. And yeah. It's not just because he dicks her down good. He is respectful.
So respectful.
Can we just talk about for a second too? Like the way Katie writes Hades is so good. Like as a reader, he's got a cadence and he's got this like very... Like, there's a point after the first party, and I don't know why this dialogue stuck with me, where they go back up to his room and they're ready to bone. Okay. Yeah. And she's got this elaborate outfit on with lots of straps. And she's like, "I need you." And he's like, "I want you naked." And she's like, "I hope you're willing to wait," because she has to like take it all and off. And he's like, "I'm not." And then he takes out a knife and he just cuts him off her.
So good.
So hot, because he's not ruthless about it. He's caring. He's like soft and gentle with it. But he's like clearly, it's like a hunger and he's not going to hurt her. It's so hot. And, but not only that, but just like the way he talks, she's like, hope you're willing to wait. And he's like, I'm not. Like, it, I feel like it's just so pithy and good and like direct that there, yeah. It gives him this aura of total sexiness where he's witty. Like, he's very witty and he's smart. I would argue that he's more of a beta than like an alpha, which yes. is super hot because we have so many, it's this alpha saturated market.
Yeah. We don't need another alpha. We're overflowing with alphas.
No, give me a witty beta who like knows what he wants and is comfortable in his masculinity.
Yes. And I think another way that that comes out sort of is how he kneels for her. Readers. Yep.
That scene, it's, they have another kind of sex party. At first, she kind of wants to be fucked in front of everybody.
She thinks she wants to go on the dates. This is actually a huge fantasy that she has, is that first time when they enjoyed each other, there was a couple on the dates, like center stage going mm-hmm. at it. And she found that incredibly sexy. And she's like, yes, this is what I want to do. And there's something in her that gets really excited about the idea of doing that without quite being ready for it. And so Hades has to navigate this sort of moment where he also is really excited to do this with her, but also wants to make sure that she's completely ready, that she's not biting off more than she can chew. He even kind of, he reacts to all the signs that she's giving. And then he takes the opportunity to say, like, you know what? I don't feel like taking you on the dais tonight. I don't want to share you with anyone. Mm-hmm. I want us to enjoy each other on the throne today.
Yes. And she is kind of taken back at first because she's the type of person who will kind of be super ambitious at first and maybe overextend herself, which is so fucking felt. And yes. A lover who is not only flexible and is willing to negotiate with her, but kind of is reading her constantly. And he's like, you aren't ready for this. And he's not making a decision for her. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? He just knows her. And that's like deeply delicious. And she's like, well, then why don't you fuck my mouth? And he totally does. It is 100% hot. And yeah. then he's like, you know what? I'm going to get on my knees for you in front of everybody. This is like a man who rules an entire, like basically his own little mini country. So for him to get on his knees in front of her and she's on the throne.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's delicious.
It's scrum diddlyumptious. And I adored it.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically got two people who, this started off as like a bargain, a means to an end, but they're slowly falling for each other and realizing, oh shit.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yes. And that kind of creates, there's a big overarching story of how Demeter is trying to get Persephone back, how Zeus is trying to get Persephone back. And that's the big stakes story that's going on, but there's this other lower stakes thing where they're falling in love and Persephone is realizing, I think I really care about this person, but I have to leave Olympus because this is what I decided I would do. That's what I said I would do, and it's what I have to do. So even if I do care about him, doesn't matter. And so they're kind of on a little bit of a journey where they have to figure out how to navigate this, where Persephone has to embrace that maybe it's okay that plans change based mm-hmm. on what's going on and how you feel. And as long as it's something that you are 100% there for, then heck yes, go for it.
The girl is in love, okay? Mm-hmm. And Hades is feeling the same way. He's like, I think at one point, you know, they admit to each other, if I was a different person, I would not let you leave. I would want you to stay forever. I would never want you to go. And she's like, if I were a different person, you wouldn't have to ask. I would already be staying. And then he's like, but we're not different people.
Uh-huh.
You're like, ah! Yeah, I know. yeah, no, it's got a lot of like, it's like, meanwhile, the upper city's like, you know, plotting and trying to suss out how to get her back. And meanwhile, they're at like a winter market. They're fucking without a condom because they discuss safety. They're like,
yes.
I'm tested. Yeah, I'm tested. And he's like, yeah. And she's like, I have an IUD. He's like, well, I get tested regularly. And then they fucking bone without a condom. And it's like, it's sexy and it's responsible.
Yeah.
It's just giving me a lot. And I really loved it. They're just really fucking balls to the wall. Falling mm-hmm. for each other, and it's
they end up buying puppies together.
They end up buying some puppies together. Well, her reasoning is she's like, I want something to stay with him because when I'm gone, he's not gonna have anybody. He's kind of lonely in this house, and I'm like, shut up, girl. Like,
you want to build a little home with him, and part of that is having puppies together.
Exactly. I also love that that's the only children they have. It's great.
Yes. On board.
On board with the fact that they don't have any, like, I mean, okay, I there's no shade again to, like, anyone who, like, likes that aspect of a romance where it's like, ooh, we could have kids together, or we could get you pregnant. That's whatever. That's fine. But it's just very saturated, and they yeah. didn't, it was still really hot, and there was no, like, none of that, which is, like, it's yeah. just kind of nice and refreshing a little bit. That's all.
Yeah, we had a happily ever after where the happily ever after isn't automatically family. Having a family.
Right. Because that's not the happily can be a labor after.
Yeah, the happily ever after can be the relationship being what it is between the two people. So
it can be just happiness. Mm-hmm. And so towards the end of the book, everything does change because is it Eurydice who
yes.
ends up kind of getting in trouble and Persephone has to save her and mm-hmm. Hades missteps because he steps over the bridge to basically protect Eurydice.
Yes. So
and she comes down to the lower city.
Part of the division between the upper city and the lower city is that people really aren't supposed to be going between them, which is part of the weird thing to me with the fact that so many upper city people come down to live on the fast side. But in general, there's not supposed to be a lot of crossover. And then Hades and Zeus are never supposed to cross the bridge. And so, of course, Zeus, being a manipulative asshole that he is, instead of coming out in an all-out war the way he wants to do it, he basically sets a trap where he has Eurydice followed and stalked, and she can't reach anyone on the phone, so she finally makes it through to Persephone. Persephone is right there for it. She says, head towards the closest bridge and we'll meet you there. And they make it to the bridge. Eventually, Eurydice comes out of the fog and is there. She's wounded. Her arm is hurt. She's terrified. And there's a man over her being very threatening. And Persephone's at the point where she's going to run across to get them. And I think that was almost like the big goal was get Persephone to come across. I don't think it was so much to bait Hades to come across. But Hades, because he loves Persephone so much, was like, I don't care about this whole truce thing. I'm crossing the bridge. And right as she's about to be stabbed, he saves her. And he brings her back to the lower city, which now everyone's kind of in a their breaths are held, oh shit moment. Because we know there's gonna be fallout from this.
Yes. Stupid fallout.
Stupid.
And Zeus follows through. He kind of sends a message through Hermes and says, like, hey, you fucked up. Return Persephone to me and her sister, and I won't destroy everything you love. Again, you and everything you love again. Persephone finds this out and through Hermes, and decides that she's like, I can't let this happen to Hades. I'm basically going to turn myself in.
She has a plan, you guys.
She does. It's a plan. I mean, it's kind of a trope in itself. Like, I'm going to do the worst thing possible and basically sacrifice myself. It feels like that's kind of a trope.
Yes.
Yeah, we've seen this before. So she does. She has Hermes take her back. Eurydice stays behind, which is, again, that's a little sweet little pocket of lore, you know, because
yes.
Eurydice stays in the underworld. And she goes back up to confront Zeus.
And
her mom.
She encounters Zeus at the party. It's kind of announced that, oh, my betrothed has returned. She kind of wraps up that discussion with Zeus rather quickly and moves on to her actual plan, which is connecting with her mother and saying, I'm going to make a deal with you. You have influence. You have the power to make this happen. I have Hades, who is on my side. What can we do? How valuable would it be for you to have Hades as an ally and for us to take down Zeus together?
I love her.
She has a plan, which I was very glad that she had a plan, because throughout a lot of the story, Persephone is very guilty about things. Mm-hmm. She's like, because of my actions, this is hurting everyone else. So what is my right to be happy if this is hurting all these other people? And so I liked that she actually went into this with a plan that would resolve things and that did have her coming out in a way that she would be happy at the end instead of being completely self-sacrificing. Because there's a lot of the time where you're like, you're just...
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Sacrificing yourself for everyone else.
I get what you're doing, but it's not going to help. Yeah, it's making everything bad.
No one will be happy this way. Stop.
No one will be happy. So, of course, Hades finds out that she has left. He's devastated, but it's been a while since I read the ending, but he goes after her.
He finds out, but by the way that everything happened, he actually, a lot of times when this sort of thing happens, there's that big miscommunication where the lover is then like, oh, she has truly turned against me and fuck the world. And Hades does not do this. He sees that she went over there in a black dress. He sees, he remembers a couple things he said. And in his mind, he is looking on the bright side. This guy is like, I don't think that she's sacrificing herself. I think there's a plan in action. Yeah. But he is also driven to not just sit in place and wait for it to take place. He kind of starts walking toward the upper city, but then our dear friends, Hermes and Dionysus, pull up in their car and they're like, get in, bitch, we're giving you a ride.
we're going killing.
Yeah. And so on the drive, they head over to the upper city and they kind of know, like, he's going to take on Zeus. And then right before it's time for him to get out, Hermes is like, oh, I got a message for you. And it's from Demeter, and it says basically, you know what you have to do, be smart, and hands him a gun.
Oh my God!
You gotta take out Zeus, because he is demon spawn awfulness. And so he actually previously, when he was young, had made a plan to take down Zeus. So he knew everything about the layout of the compound that Zeus lived in, or I guess it was like a high rise. And he knew where all the security was. And as he's wandering through, he's even noticing, like, security isn't that crazy. And this must be part of what Demeter has done to make this okay. And he also had learned it wasn't just Demeter, that he had a solid half of the 13 on his side, and with him and Demeter and the other allies, they had the majority. They had 7 of the 13. And so he goes up, he finds Zeus's room, and in the bathroom, he hears the sound of fucking. He gets really nervous, thinks, please don't let it be Persephone, please don't let it be Persephone. Kind of glances in, realizes it's not. Whew. Fine. So he waits in the darkness for Zeus to finish.
Like, I'm gonna wait.
I'm just gonna wait here. Yeah. And so Zeus finishes up, just kind of says, get out of here, to the woman that he's with, heads to his desk, and then Hades emerges from the darkness to have the showdown.
This is the showdown.
It's awesome. And honestly, I felt like this scene stretched on a little bit too much for me. Mm-hmm. there was so much of him being wanting to kill Zeus, but then saying, but if I kill him, Persephone will not love me. Like, I'll she'll be so disappointed. I'll be just as bad as him. And, like, part of this was he had almost killed the man that was about to kill Eurydice, and Persephone called out to have him stop before he actually killed him. But he had beaten this guy pretty much to a pulp, and he thought after that that Persephone would look at him with judgment, but she had zero judgment for him after that. She went to him for comfort. She's like, I love you so much. Thank you so much. So it was weird to me that he kept stopping himself and thinking, oh, Persephone won't respect me if I kill him. To me, it was pretty clear. I'm like, everyone wants this guy dead. This guy needs to die. If I were in your shoes, I would kill this guy, and I would not hesitate. So I struggled with this scene.
The loophole here is that he ends up falling out a window and dying.
Yes. So because because Hades spent so long wrestling with his inner conscious about this, he... Basically, Zeus, who actually is a cold killer, he's a killer, and that's what he's good at, wrestles the gun from Hades because he's not going to hesitate. This guy isn't going to stop to try to kill you, and he keeps telling you, the minute I can, I'm going to murder you. And Hades still in his mind is like, but I can't kill him. So they have this huge fight. The gun goes off and it shoots out a window. There's glass that spatters everywhere. And they're fighting and they're fighting. And there's a point where then Zeus pulls back to hit Hades, but doesn't realize that the window is blasted out behind him and loses his balance and falls to his death out the window. So at the end, like, sweet beta Hades.
Yeah, Zeus, Zeus basically caused his own demise, and Hades doesn't have to do anything. And he's like, well, I guess that's the loophole. I didn't kill him. He kind of fell out the window himself.
He fell out the window, but no one will believe it. But that's what happened. But Demeter was there, and she took care of all the cleanup and made it really clear that, hey, I have an agreement with my daughter. In order to help you with this, so you better show up, and I'll take care of all this. Did you know that pigs are really good at eating dead bodies? She said that specifically.
Oh my god!
So, Ethan Demeter's heart is a farmer.
I'm never messing with her.
She's a farmer. She knows this stuff.
Oh, you're right. Still scary.
Still very scary. And so he ends up just walking back to the lower city. No one in the upper city knows who he is. So even though Zeus is dead on the floor as he leaves the building, no one thinks to look at him. They don't recognize him as Hades. And he just...
Well, and it's funny because, like, literally that's almost his benefit. But, like, they all caused that because they turned him into such a, like, a boogeyman that no one saw him for a long time. And therefore, he could walk around unnoticed. I mean... He probably could have done this a long time ago, but it was just like, he just didn't. He didn't have a point to until Persephone was involved. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so kind of makes his way back to the lower city where he is. A little bit hazy on this part.
No. So basically Persephone then wakes up, realizes that Zeus is dead, and she's like, wow.
That's convenient.
Cool.
That's suspicious.
That's suspicious. Yeah. She's like, I wonder what happened. Demeter's like, oh yeah.
You better hold up your end of the bargain
with Hades. And she's like, okay, no problem. At one point she talks to Eurydice, and Eurydice is like, go get your man. And
yeah,
because when she writes to Hades, she's like,
yeah. Hey, lover.
I guess we're fine now.
And he does have a moment where he's like, it was me. Like, she finds him with all the puppies, and he says, like, it was me, I did it. And she's like, well, I don't condone murder, but if anyone needed to be murdered, it was definitely him. It's fine.
Like, it's cool. And he's like, awesome. But then he also tries to set her free. Remember, because she's going to leave. She's got her
trust plan.
A woman of the world. And she's like, I don't want to. And he's like, you don't have to do that. And she's like, I don't want to. As in great, you know, neon gods fashion, she basically says yes 5 times. And he makes sure about 5 times. He's like, you don't have to. He's like, I don't want to. He's like, but you really don't have to. And she's like, seriously, I don't want to leave. I want to be with you right now, right here. And he's like, you can always change your mind. She's like, I know.
Just kiss me, you fool.
You fool. And they live happily ever after. The epilogue is...
Great.
Great.
No babies.
What do they do instead?
They finally achieve their dream kink, which is to fuck each other on the dais in front of everyone. This is the epilogue we need. Yes.
You know what? That's their happily for now after. It's great. And that's how the book ends. Fucking on a dais in front of your friends.
Yeah, Hermes like shouts out at one point. She's like, And it was from Hades' perspective. He's like, I think I hear Hades' voice, or Hermes' voice.
It's great.
It is.
What a great book. What a great book. I loved it. It was so much fun. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to share that we haven't talked about.
I don't think so. I mean, we love our Hades and Persephone. I am really shocked that this is the very first one we talked about, considering how much we've read.
Yeah, I am still trying to get Rachel to read Receiver of Many.
And I really want to read it. It's just I need to read it with my eyeballs. There isn't an audio version yet. And a lot of my books get completed during 5-hour drives, to be honest. There's a reason I have gotten through 4 or 5 books in the last 2 weeks.
That's true. So, and you've really got a full spectrum with the Hades and Persephone trope. There's ones that we haven't even read or anything, but mm-hmm. Receiver of Many, which is written by an author who's named Rachel Alexander, it's like... it's sexy, but it's definitely not high up on like, it's not a huge spice rating, but mm-hmm. it's so beautifully written. It's set in like classical lore. And it's just really beautiful. And you've got Lore Olympus, which is kind of a funny, quirky retelling.
It's in blood wounds, comic form. Being so it's beautiful art.
Yes. Very beautiful art. Rachel
Smythe. Art.
And it's quirky and fun, and they are turning into a Netflix show, which is amazing. Yeah. And Deal with the Elven King is another fun one. That one's very Fade to Black. It's kind of more, I don't know if it's like, why is that YA? I don't know. It kind of feels like.
It feels, not necessarily, so it feels like new adult romance. So I feel like YA still technically falls in high school reading, and new adult I think is supposed to be like, I'm in college and I'm reading.
There you go. You're a new adult. And that one was fun. It's inspired by Hades and Persephone.
Yes.
And then
it's elves and fairies and Hades and Persephone.
Great. Yes. And then Touch of Darkness is also another
not our favorite.
Touch of Darkness was not my favorite, and I it's very beloved, though. I will say that. A lot of people mm-hmm. really do like it. I personally did not enjoy it as much as the other ones, but I'm glad that people are, you know, having their fun with it.
At the point where I had already read Neon Gods and Lore Olympus, with Touch of Darkness, it felt like it took elements from both of those. And not just from the Hades and Persephone, from, like, the way that it was being done, it felt very much like that. And then for me... the sex felt very vanilla, but it was trying to pitch it in a not vanilla way. It was like, okay.
Yeah. But yeah.
Still great.
I started being like not into it as much, but yeah.
Yeah. And it was a lot more like kind of Kingpin of the City gangster vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
And I have... one on my radar that I was just telling you about called Drag Me Up by R.M. Virtues, which looks like it might be interesting. And I'm really excited because it's one that's written by a
guy,
one of the male persuasion, which never happens. And then also, I do believe he's part of the LGBTQ community. So I'm really excited to read that. That's another one where it doesn't have the audiobook, but it's I keep putting it to the front
he's
of my
Lauren read. Author. Again, I feel like a broken record. Have Rachel do your audiobook.
I'll do it, and then I'll read it, and it'll be great.
You'll listen to yourself?
Well, no. I will know the story because I will have read it aloud.
Okay.
I'll take it in while I read it. But yeah, super fantastic. If you guys like Katie Roberts, there isn't just this kind of God series. There's her Disney series where it's Disney villains, you guys. We're talking love between Jafar and Jasmine, between Hook and Tinkerbell. There's an Ursula love story. Like,
ooh.
You guys. And yeah, I adore her, and I need to read more of her things. I have them downloaded. But I also want to vary myself and give you more than just Katie Roberts.
Let's do it. Yeah, we'll definitely cover more Katie Roberts probably in this series, in this podcast.
Especially Hook, you guys. I don't know what it is about.
Oh my God, anything Peter Pan.
Peter Pan. Captain Hook. I'm on board. I'm always on board.
Yes, I am. So thank you for listening. This was a fun, I liked this. This was fun to talk about.
Yes, it was very good. So this is one where we both read it together, which is fun. We'll have more of these. We'll also mix in our ones where we haven't both read it, just because this will help us keep getting stuff out to you. If you are enjoying things, definitely give us a shout. Reach out online and let us know. And I guess rating on things is always great. Give us a rate.
Yeah, help us rate. And thank you so much for listening. Please talk to us. We love when we get the fun comments about, you know, everyone. Like, we love when we get comments like, oh, I was just laughing so hard, or oh, this episode made me so happy. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's just fun to know that there are other people at the other end of the void listening to us.
It is. So thank you, dear listeners. We hope you have a most wonderful day. And we'll see you next time on A Real Bodice Ripper.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to A Real Bodice Ripper.
Intro, outro, trailer music is Air by D. Yan Ki.
You can find us and talk to us at the following.
Instagram at A Real Bodice Ripper,
Twitter at ARBR Podcast,
or email us at arealbodiceripper@gmail.com. Take a care.
And many felicitations upon your household.